Now we're holding on Lamed Beis. Amud Beis, beginning the fourth parak of the Masechta. Now that we learned at the end of the third parak, we were talking about a person who makes a neder not to have hana from different classes of people. So we had people who go on sea voyages, people who have people whose hair is sometimes visible, people who have who are circumcised, who aren't, et cetera, et cetera. So now the next two prakim are going to define for us in more detail what exactly is entailed when a person says that I'm not going to have a neder, I'm not going to have hana from somebody, or somebody's not going to have hana from me. What exactly is and isn't included? What kind of things are under that category of things that are where the hana is and isn't also? And we're going to see... there are various things that are not considered hana for one reason or another as we go through these two prakim. So first, the Mishnah starts off. Ein ben hamudr hana mechavegai, l'mudr heimenu machol. Now, there's two ways that you could make them in general. When you make a neder to not have hana from somebody, there are two ways that you could formulate the neder. You could say, I'm making a neder not to have hana from him at all. And you can make a neder that I'm not going to have hana from him that has to do with food. So the Mishnah is saying there's no difference. Ein ben hamudr hana mechaveiro. There's no difference between whether you say I'm mudr hana as in I'm not going to have hana from him at all. Mudr memenu machol. Or when you're saying that I won't have hana from him that has to do with food. Ella, the only difference is drisas haregel. The only difference is as far as walking through his property. If you make a neder to not have hana from him, then you're not allowed to walk or take a shortcut or something through his property. But if it was only a neder, have things having to do with food, then you would be allowed to, because that has nothing to do with food. The kalim she'ein oisin behen oichol nefesh, and also a difference is as far as borrowing kalim that are not used for food. As the mission is going to go on to define what those are. So what do we mean? Hamudr machol mechaveiro. So if a person makes a neder that he won't have hana of food from somebody else, lo yashilenu nafa. So he's not allowed. So his friend is not allowed to lend him a sieve that will be used for sifting flour, or kvara, or sifter that's used for sifting the grain to get out the shells and whatever that are the shells and the pieces of dirt and whatever that are there. Verechayim, or a mill or millstones to grind the grain. Vetanu, or an oven to bake the bread. And the Ran explains the chiddush of mentioning all those things is. The Ran and all the other Mephoshim over here explain that the chiddush of it is, you would think, if the Mishnah hadn't told you, maybe kalim she'ein oisin behen oichol nefesh means things that are used davka for ready-to-eat food. So for example, or where the food is going to be ready, right, not ready to eat, but rather where the food is going to be ready right after you use that kalim. Let's say, for example, you would understand that under those circumstances, you can't borrow a pot from the other person, because as soon as you use the pot, as soon as you cook the food in it, the food is ready to eat. Here, we're talking about things that are further removed from food. You're sifting the flour, you're still pretty far from edible food. The same thing with all the other ones. So you would think that maybe you would be allowed to, and therefore the Mishnah is telling us that not. But the Mishnah continues, Mashiloi choluk, but on the other hand, the other person would be allowed to lend you a shirt, the tabas, or a ring, the talus, or a talus, a cloak, or nizamim, or rings, because none of those have to do with oichol nefesh. We're going to see in the Gemara what the point is of mentioning. We're going to see what the point of mentioning those is, and we're going to see whether there are in fact. In the next Mishnah, by the way, we're going to see on Lamed Gimel Lamed Aleph that it's different if these things are regularly rented rather than lending. Then there is hanas machol involved, because then the fact that the other person is lending you this, for example, meaning that you don't have to go and rent one, is saving you money, which now you can use for food. So that's different. That'll be the next Mishnah. But right now we're talking about in a place where people regularly lend out these small items to one another. So there's no mumun involved. And therefore there's nothing that brings to hanas machol. Therefore it would be mutter. So the Gemara says, mantan. This that we said in the Mishnah, that if the neder is that you're mudr hana, then you're not even allowed to take a shortcut. You're not even allowed to walk through the other guy's property. Mantana, which Tana is it that says that? The question is, it's such a small hana to take a shortcut through somebody else's property. It's not even something that most people would mind because there's no hefsin involved. Which tana is it that says that nevertheless that would be considered hana? The answer is Amar Rabba Adaba Abba Rabbi Eliezer. That would be according to Rabbi Eliezer, the Tanya. We learn in a braisa, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, afilu victor also b'mudr hana. When it comes to a mudr hana, which is the subject of our perek, even vitur is osur. Vitur is the kind of thing, it means like giving away. The Ran gives an example. You sell something, for example, it's normal to throw in a little something extra. You're buying a certain amount of peres. It's normal that the seller will throw in an extra fruit or two for free. So even that kind of thing is mutter by a mudr hana. And the Ran mentions this means when we talked about in the previous parak about the different kinds of things that you're selling. Sometimes you have something which is very difficult to sell. Nobody wants to buy it. We call it zvina de romi al ape. It's like sitting on his face and blocking his vision. And the seller is thinking to himself, I wish I could get rid of this. So now when somebody finally goes and buys it, then he may even throw in a little extra something, a little something extra for free. Even that kind of thing, says Rabbi Eliezer, is considered a hana, and therefore, it would be also, by the same token, it's also osur then to walk through the other person's property. Meanwhile, the other chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Eliezer would also disagree with our Mishnah. Now, the Ran and Tosfos bring up a point that we find in a different Gemara that says that seems to imply that using another person's chotzer is in fact a problem, and people are makbid. So if people are makbid, then there's no question that's considered a hana. So even the chachamim would have to agree. Why are we saying over here that only Rabbi Eliezer would consider that a hana? So the Ran brings an answer from the Ramban that there we're talking about to hang around the chotzer, to loiter there. So most people are going to object to that. So the Gemara there in Baba Basra is saying that kind of thing people would mind. So that kind of thing is definitely considered a hana. Here we're just talking about walking through. We're just talking about taking a shortcut. So therefore, only Rabbi Eliezer would consider it a hana. The Chachamim would not. Tosfos over here gives a different answer, and in greater detail they talk about it in Baba Basra, that the difference is that here we're talking about, for example, we're talking about a valley. You have an area with a bunch of fields. When the fields are not currently being worked, when they're lying fallow anyway, after the harvest, before the plowing season, whatever. Usually, people don't mind when you walk through their fields, and it's not like it's anywhere near their house anyway that they should object. As opposed to Tosfos says a chotzer would be different. The Gemara there in Baba Basra is talking about a chotzer. Where there, that's closer to your house. You may mind even people using it as a shortcut. But here we'll be talking about a valley full of fields. So here, only Rabbi Eliezer would consider it hana. And that's what the Mishnah is saying. That if the neder was to not have hana, then even that kind of minor hana is osur. Whereas if it was hana, if the neder was only mudur hemenu machol, the neder is that he won't have hana from him that has to do with food, then taking a shortcut through his fields or through his chotzer or whatever will not be considered hana. The Ran also adds that since we have a stam mishnah like Rabbi Eliezer, then that implies you the halacha should be like him. Also, we have something in the next parak that implies that. The Ram then brings from Rabbeinu Hananel that says that no, the halacha and Rabbeinu Tam, who say the halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer, Lamaisa in Shulchan Aruch it's Paskin, like Rabbi Eliezer over here, that even this kind of minor hana is also in the case when a person made such a neder. Okay, we said in the Mishnah, Mudra Maicha Mechaber Lo Yashilenu Fulu. We said if he made a neder not to have hana of food from somebody else, then the other person is not allowed to lend him a sieve or a sifter or the various kalim that we mentioned in the Mishnah. So the question is, why should those be also Vahomin Maichel Nader? Didn't he make the neder not to have food from him? So these are not actual food. So we understand it means he wouldn't be allowed to eat the other person's food. But why should he be also to borrow kalim that are used for food? The answer is Amr Shimon Lakish, but Oimah Hanas Malchocha Olai. The answer is that Rish Lakish says, it's not talking about where he just said a neder that I won't have your food. He added the word hanas. He said, the hanah of your food will be also to me. So that means, in other words, that he's making himself also in anything that brings to food that can be eaten. Machol cha, the Ran says, because you're the one who's causing me the hanah, who makes the food able to be eaten. So the fact that he used the word hanas, if he had just used the word machol cha, then you're right. Only the other guy's food would be also to him. But because he uses the word hanas, therefore that strengthens it, and that makes that he can't use the kalim either. But the Gemara says, Ema, still, you could say that hanas ma'acholcha means something else. You could say it means shelo yilois chitin v'yitin ha'makoser. It means that he's answering himself not only that I won't eat your food, but also that I won't have hana from something that you ate. Namely, that you will be also to chew wheat and put it on my womb. The Gemara mentions in Psachim, and we learned it briefly in Ksubas as well, that there's a Mishnah in Psachim that says you're not allowed to do that on Pesach because saliva makes the wheat chometz. But the Mishnah with that is implying, we learned in Ksubas, we have the expression, Loshen Chachamim Marpe, the Loshen of a Chachamim teaches us healing. Holding on, Mam and Gimel, and Aleph. So the Mishnah chose that example in order to, by the way, teach us that this kind of thing is good for a womb. So Reuben has made a neder not to have hanah from Shimon. So now what we'd be saying, and he used the word hanas ma'acholcha. So fine, what it would mean is that he would be also to eat Shimon's food. He'd also be also, maybe we would say that Shimon is not allowed to eat something and thereby benefit Reuben, namely, by chewing wheat and then putting it on a wound, on an injury of Reuven's, in order to help heal it. So maybe that would be also. Where are we getting that should be also for Reuven to borrow kalim for food from Shimon? The answer is, Amar Rava, ba'oima hanah ha'mavir l'dema acholcha alai. The answer is, Rava says, the Loshen is a little bit different. What he says is, hanah that brings to your eating, or actually machol is really supposed to be, it says on the side, hanah hamavili de machol, hanah that brings to eating a lie will be also to me. So therefore that's why it includes the various kalim that bring to hanah of food, namely, in other words, a sieve and a sifter and the rest of the things that we mentioned in the Mishnah. So now the Ran discusses, there are two different opinions over here. So now, suppose he says that Loshen. Is he in fact, so now it's clear from the Mishnah that he's going to be also to borrow kalim that are used for food. Is he in fact going to be also in that case also to have Shimon chew wheat for him and put it on Reuven's wound? So the Ran brings two opinions about that. First he brings an opinion that yes, in that case, he will be also in that as well. Then the Ran says, I don't like that explanation. Hanah hamavili de Michael does not seem to include that kind of thing. So if he says a neder just from machol without anything else, then it only means he's not allowed to eat the other guy's food. If he says hanas machol cha'olai, then it means he's also to eat the other guy's food as well as to benefit from the chewed wheat. But he'd be allowed to borrow kalim. And if he says hanah hamavila de Michael, then he will be also to eat the other guy's food and also to borrow the kalim, but he will be mutter to benefit from the wheat. That's how the Ran learns. There is an interesting discussion in this regard, by the way. Often in halacha, when we say that something is osir, you say that usually it's osir in hanah, that's the regular kind of hanah. For example, the Torah tells us don't eat something treif, but in general you're allowed to have hanah from it, unless the Torah specifies otherwise, like by basa b'cholav. Here, this is a very unusual kind of hanah. Why should it even be included in the neder in the first place? And so one answer is, in fact, that when it comes to nedarim, you would, in fact, be also even an unusual kind of hanah. Not everybody agrees to that, though, and they give different other reasons. And in fact, so in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, we don't have Hilchos Nedarim. However, we do have something, incidentally, that is mentioned in Hilchos Eruvin. You have a case where a person has made a neder not to benefit from a certain kind of food, where nevertheless such food is allowed to be used for an Eruv or a Shittuf, for an Eruv Chatzeres or a Shittuf Mavoyas for him, because he may not be allowed to eat it, but it's not completely off limits to him because he can use it. He still can have hana from it in unusual ways. So that would be implying, in other words. So in other words, if he had made a neder, for example, not to have hana from wheat, not necessarily would he be also to use wheat in this kind of way to put on his wound, right? Only over here we're talking about he made a specific neder not to have hana from your eating. Then we're saying that includes, according to the first opinion that the Ran brings, that would include this as well. And according to the second opinion, no, only if he said the hana of according to everybody, if he says the hana of your eating is also to me, so then your eating includes your chewing wheat. And then the Ran says, if he only says the hana that brings to eating is also to me, then the Ran holds, they're saying that in fact he wouldn't be also for the other guy to chew wheat for him, because that's not a hana that brings to eating. Okay. The Gemara says, Omer of Papa, sack lahavi peris. Suppose that he wants to borrow a sack in order to carry peris from one thing to another, from one place to another. Or v'chamor lahavi olav peiros. Or if he wants to borrow a donkey to carry such peiros on it, v'afilu tzana ba'alma. Or even if he just wants to borrow a basket, hana hamavila de Michael. All of those are considered a hana that brings to food. Because, in other words, the Ran says, you would think that maybe our Mishnah mentions, for example, a sieve or a sifter. Without them, you don't have the food, can't be prepared. They are essential in preparing the food. Here, on the other hand, we're just talking about things to carry the food from point A to point B. You would think maybe that shouldn't be also. Therefore, a papa is informing us that not. In fact, you would be also to borrow those things as well. Again, if the neder was formulated as hana hamavili de Michael, that I am also in hana from you that will bring to food. Because ultimately, these things do bring to food. These are actually not so much yodais. This is when he says hana of food, of the hana from you that will bring to food is also, that's not a yad, that's actually a full-fledged neder. Well, depending, I mean, if he said also only, then fine, that would be a yad, because really the proper way would be to say also like a korban. But fine. But in other words, the point is that he actually expressed what it is that's included in the neder. When we talk about yodis at the beginning of the Masechta, it's more that what he was speaking of is very clear, but we needed to fill in something in order to say that it's a neder at all. He said, for example, such and such a lie, we had to figure out whether he means that it's also to me like a korban, or whether he means that it's on me to bring the value of it as a korban and so forth. So now that Rapapa stated that the dinim of our Mishnah, that he's not allowed to borrow kalim that are used for Eichel Nefesh, would include even things that are very distant from preparing food, namely they're not needed for preparing the food at all, just for bringing it from one place to another. So all of those things, he says, Hana Hamavila de Michael, who all of those are considered a Hana that brings the food. Now, Boy Rapapa. Now, on top of that, then Rapapa has a question. What about Sus Lirkov Olav? What if Reuven, who made the neder, and by the way, keep in mind, throughout everything that we're saying over here, we're going to talk about that it's Reuven who made the neder, not to benefit from Shimon. Really, it would be effectively the same thing if Shimon were to make the neder, that Reuven should not benefit from him. Either way, the point is Reuven is also to have benefit from Shimon. But let's keep things simple. Let's say that it's Reuven who made the neder, not to benefit from Shimon. So now the question is, suppose he wants to later on borrow from Shimon Sus Lirkov Olav, a horse to ride on it, the Tabas Leroyspa, or he wants to borrow a ring in order to show off with it. Now the Ran explains that both the horse and the ring would be for him to look very important. So he's on his way to a party, for example. So he wants to come riding on a horse wearing a fancy ring. That way they'll think that he's more important than he really is. And that way they'll give him a nice portion of food over there. So now the question is that considered a hana that brings to food or not? So that's how the Ran learns. The Rosh explains that no, the horse doesn't necessarily mean that in order to honor him, the horse is just to be able to get to the party. And then the ring, yes, is in order for them to think that he's important. So what about those? The question is, mahu, what would be the din with those? Are those considered anywhere close enough to Hanas Michael, like this, for example, with the ring, according to everybody. So let's say, for example, with the horse, according to the Ran, the point is if he comes there on a horse, they're going to give him a nicer portion of food than they otherwise would. So is that considered a Hana that brings the food, or is that too far removed from the actual food to not be a problem? The same thing with the ring. He comes there, he shows up there wearing a fancy ring, the same thing, they'll give him a nicer portion. And according to the Rosh, the question is just the horse he's using to get there. Without the horse, it would have taken him longer to get there, or he might not get there at all. Is that considered a hana that brings the food or not? And also the Papa asked, Mifsak umezo ba'are mai. What about, would he be allowed to take a shortcut through the other guy's property in order to get to the party? So again, are those considered a hana hamaviyah l'day ma'ichol? We said in the Mishnah that if he makes a neder only to that he said that he makes a neder only involving ma'ichol, then he is allowed to take a shortcut through his property, because we said then drisa saregel. But now where he's taking the shortcut in order to get to a party where he's going to eat, is that maybe different? Is that maybe considered hana ma'ichol? Is that maybe considered hana hamaviyah l'day ma'ichol? So the Gemara says, Toshma, well, let's try to prove from the end of the Mishnah. We said, we said that on the other hand, you are allowed to borrow from a person that you're also to have hana from. You're allowed to borrow from him a hana of food, that is. You're allowed to borrow from him a shirt or a talus or ring or earrings or finger rings. The order, interestingly, is a little different than it was in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, the order was cholok v'tabas v'talos v'nezamim. Here it's cholok v'talos. Okay, whatever. Anyway, I don't know if there's any particular significance to the difference. But anyway, so you have to ask, hey chidomi. So you have to ask, what is the scenario that the Mishnah is telling us that you're allowed to? Ilema shaloy le'rois v'han. Are we talking about you're not borrowing them in order to show off with them? You're just borrowing them because right now you need them for practical purposes. Does the Mishnah need to tell us? Of course, there's no hana of Michael involved in that at all. So of course you'd be allowed to borrow a shirt or a talus, etc. Evidently, the Mishnah must mean that you're using them in order to show off, like we said, where people at the party will think, look, this guy is wearing this fancy choluk or this fancy talus. He must be an important person. Let's give him a nicer portion of food. And the Mishnah is saying that he can borrow it. So therefore implying that such a thing would be mutter. That is considered far enough away from Hanas Michael that it should be mutter. The Gemara says, "Loi, not necessarily. La'olam shaloi le'rois." You could say the Mishnah is not talking about where he's borrowing them in order to show off, but just because he needs them for practical purposes. But the Aidi, the Katoni Reisha, lo yashilanu, since the Mishnah had started with a list of things that he's not allowed to borrow, the Katoni etona sefer mashiloi, therefore the Mishnah finishes off with a list of things that he could borrow, but not necessarily implying that he could borrow them under any circumstances, maybe just under regular circumstances. Suppose a person borrows a choluk, for example, just in order to be able to go out because he ran out of shirts, but not necessarily because he's wearing it to a party where they're gonna think of him more nicely and give him a nicer portion of food. So in the end, the bottom line is that the Ran says there. So the Gemara has left your papa's question open. Therefore, the result would be that, as usual, as we've said in our Masechta, you do have to be machmir. However, the Rambam adds, a person wouldn't get malchus for it because you can't get malchus for violating something which may only be also dirabana. So over here, we can't, or not really dirabana, it's a suffix, whether it's also or not, therefore you can't give him malchus for that suffix. Okay. The Mishnah continues, v'chol davar she'en oisin ba'oichol nefesh. Now, even when it comes to things that are not used for oichol nefesh, but if it's the kind of place where they regularly rent out such things rather than lending them, then it would be also. So if you have, let's say, for example, a choluk, if it's a kind of place where people regularly lend each other shirts, then fine, there's no Hanas Michael involved. And we just discussed in the Gemara, okay, is it maybe different if he's borrowing the shirt in order to go to a party and look nicer? But under regular circumstances, it would be mutter. But you may have a place where people don't regularly lend such things out. You want to borrow such a thing from me, you're going to have to rent it. You're going to have to pay me a few bucks for it. Well, then in that case, if he borrows it, then he's gaining Hanoa Hamavir the Demaichel, because now he's saving a few dollars, and now those few dollars he can use to buy food. Therefore, that would be awesome. So the Gemara says, Miklal, so the implication is the Resha Af Bishen Maskirin, that in the Resha, when we say that that he's not allowed to borrow a sieve or a sifter and so forth, that would be also, even if it's a place where they don't usually rent out such things. So in other words, the difference would be a sieve or a sifter, etc., you're never allowed to borrow, and a shirt and a shirt or a talus and so forth. It would depend whether the local minhag is to rent out such things and instead you're borrowing it. So man tana, who is the tana who would say that? And the answer is Amar Abba, Rabbi Eliezer. Again, that would be according to Rabbi Eliezer, because Rabbi Eliezer is the one who's saying that even vitur is also, even the kind of thing that people might regularly say, you know what, I'm willing to forego the small benefit that usually I would get. And we're saying you're not allowed to do that because that would be considered hanah. Well, then Rabbi Eliezer would be saying the same thing over here. In fact, Tosfos points out that because this Mishnah is a continuation of the previous one, and therefore, in effect, they're all one long Mishnah, and in fact, in the printed Mishnayos, they are, that is why, that's what makes the Gemara say that the whole thing is according to Rabbi Eliezer. If it hadn't been for that, so like this, we said before that Tosfos learned that the case in the previous Mishnah about walking through the other person's property, Tosfos had said over there that specifically was talking about, for example, a bika, a valley full of fields where the average person, when the crops are not in season, for the average person doesn't mind somebody else walking through his property, and it's vitur to do that. Most people wouldn't mind, and nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer is saying it's osur. The question would be, says Tosfos, what forced the Gemara to say that? To say that it's a coin to Rabbi Eliezer and that it's talking about such a case, why didn't we say instead that we're talking about walking through his chotzer? And Tosfos had learned before that walking through his chotzer, everybody would agree, is considered hanah. Tosfos says that's why, because since this part of the Mishnah clearly has to go according to Rabbi Eliezer, because according to the Chachamim, the fact that people usually lend these, the fact that people usually rent these things out, and you instead are getting it as a loan, where therefore you're not having to pay, that small amount of vitur is considered hanah according to Rabbi Eliezer. That's what forces us to say that in the previous Mishnah as well, we're talking about that kind of hanah that is only vitur, and therefore we have to say, says Tosfos, that we're talking about walking through his field as opposed to walking through his chotzer, through his courtyard. According to the Ran, it would be slightly different. Maybe said, according to the Ran, quoting the Ramban, the difference was between hanging around in his chotzer and walking through it. So again, similar idea. In other words, you would say that the Gemara could have said it's talking about hanging around in his chotzer, and everybody would agree that that's considered hanah. But instead, the Gemara said it's talking about even walking through his chotzer, and made it according to Rabbi Eliezer, because our Mishnah clearly is like Rabbi Eliezer. Our Mishnah clearly would, there's no way to make our Mishnah work according to the Chachamim. Again, as the Ran said before, the fact that we have a Stam Mishnah over here like Rabbi Eliezer should imply the Halacha is like him, and most of the Rishonim learn that way, although Rabbi Hananel and Rabbi Tam disagree with that. Okay. Mishnah says, Hamudr Hanah Mechaveri. If a person makes a neder, so Reuven has made a neder not to have Hanah from Shimon. So nevertheless, there are certain kinds of things that Shimon can do for him. Shoikaloi as Shikloi. The one whom he's also to have hanah from is still allowed to pay machtsa shekel on his behalf. So actually, the Ran over here uses the expression hamadu lamudur. So what it would mean is. So the other way around. So let's say, in other words, it was Shimon who initiated the neder and said, Reuven is also to have hanah from me. So now Reuven is also to have hanah from Shimon. Nevertheless, later on, Shimon is allowed to give machzah shekel on Reuven's behalf. Now, why is that? So we're going to see in the Gemara. He's also allowed to pay off Reuven's debt. And he's also allowed to return a lost object of Reuven's. In the case of the machzul avedasoi, the reason is because it belonged to Reuven all along. The reason why for the machzah shekel and paying off the load and paying off the debt, that we're going to see in the Gemara. But the reason why he's allowed to return his lost object is because it was Reuven's all along. It never left Reuven's rishus. Now, what happens in places, in a case where there is schar, where there's payment involved. So the Ran explains, for example, you have the case, and now the Gemara, now you're usually not allowed to take payment for doing a mitzvah. However, the Gemara tells us in Eila Metzias, in Bava Metzia, that you can have a case where a person took time off work in order to find and return the Aveda. So then he's actually entitled to a certain amount of compensation for the time he took off work. He can't, the Mishnah says over there, he can't demand his full salary instead, but he can ask to be paid kapoyo bottle, as if he was an unemployed worker. In other words, like the amount of the amount that you, different Rishonim have different explanations what exactly that means, but it means basically that you'd pay him a lesser amount, as if he was taking off from an easier job, or as if like how much he'd be willing to be paid in order to take a day off work, whatever. There's different explanations exactly what it is, but the bottom line is he is entitled to some kind of compensation if he wants. Mind you, the Gemara says over there a person shouldn't do it. The Gemara has an expression over there, call him a didactic. A person, the Gemara has an expression over there at the end of the parak, that a person who's medactic in it, who's always particular to the nth degree, you have to pay me every dollar that I should be entitled to. Soif baldi dekach, and eventually Hashem makes him that he taka needs every dollar that he can get because he's poor. But in any case, in principle, api halacha, he is entitled to demand that payment. So now the problem is, again, so Shimon has returned Reuven's lost object, where Reuven is also to have anah from Shimon. Now the problem is that if he takes the money from Shimon, then he's having anah from him. And if he's moichel to him, then he's giving him anah. So therefore, so in a place where there is schar involved, then tipol hanah lehekdish, then that hanah should be given to hekdish, because that way he won't. That way, neither of them are having hanah from it. Now you can't just say now the Rosh adds, you can't just throw it into the Yam HaMelech, as we often say when you have something which is also hanah, because look, since it belongs to hekdish, then therefore you don't have the ability to go and destroy it and throw it into the Yam HaMelech. That would only apply to things that don't actually belong to Hekdesh, where there's a suffix, whether you can use it or various other things. We're going to talk about that. But Rosh says, therefore, we're going to learn later on in the Perek, the implication that Nidorim involve, that Nidorim, that Koinomos, as the Gemara calls them, are, that Me'ilah applies to them. We touched on this in the previous Perek, that sometimes you say when something is also by a Neder, then it's considered a form of Hekdesh. So we're going to discuss that point in the Gemara in the next couple of blocks. About that point, that it to a certain extent it's considered already to belong to Hekdesh, and therefore Me'ilah applies, and therefore you can't just throw it into the Yam HaMelech. The Rambam, by the way, explains a different point of Noit Malneh Schar. He says the same way, for example, as we were just saying, let's say as far as borrowing shirts or whatever, where there are places where the local minhag is to rent them out rather than lending them, in the same way you have places in the world where the minhag is that if you return somebody's lost object, then the guy pays you for your trouble. So again, in such places, if you were to forego that payment, then you're giving him anah, and if you collect the payment, then you're taking anah, therefore you can't do that. Okay, so the Gemara says, Alma avruchi ariba almahu. Now, you see, apparently, that the beginning of the Mishnah, talking about machzah shekel and paying off a loan, the reason why it's mutter is because you're not actually giving him anything. It's just like scaring away a lion from his property. So the Ran explains that this is referring to both the machzah shekel and paying off the loan. In other words, what happens if a person doesn't give machzah shekel? The collectors, the machzah shekel collectors, are going to go after them. Now, like this, what you've done is you haven't actually given him anything. What you've done is you've made it that now those collectors won't come after him. Similarly, you pay off his debt means that now the Baal Chayv won't come after him, but you're not actually giving him anything. The Ran also points out that when it comes to Machzah Shekel, in any case, even if a person doesn't give Machzah Shekel, he still has a portion in the Korbanos Tzibur. You shouldn't think maybe you're giving him the Hanah, that now he has a portion in the Korbanos, and if it hadn't been for that, he wouldn't have. No, the Ran says that actually a person has every Jew has a share in the Korbanos Tzibur, whether he actually gives Machzah Shekel or not. Just that if he doesn't give Machzah Shekel, then the collectors come after him. The Rosh understands it differently. He says the reason why with Machs Shekel it would be mutter is because it's a mitzvah, and mitzvahs you can talk about, those are a different kind of thing. Later on in the parak, we're going to talk about different cases where a mudr hana is still allowed to do mitzvahs on behalf of somebody else, and this would be an example of that. And when it comes to
pay,
so it can mean that he does it without the other guy knowing it, preposterous, yeah. So in the case of Shoklos Shikla, then fine, he's doing a mitzvah on his behalf. So that's not like any other kind of debt. But at least when it comes to a regular debt, then the Mishnah is implying that it's mutter because it's only metaphorically scaring away a lion. In other words, he's not actually giving him anything, he's just removing a potential source of harm. Well, the question is Mantana. Which Tana would it be that says that such a thing is mutter? The answer is Amar of Hoshia, Zu Divrei Chonon. This would be according to the opinion of Chonon. Now we learned at the end of Ksubas, the Gemara is going to quote it soon, that you have a case that we had in the last parak of Ksubas, we had a couple of dinim that Chonon, who was we learned over there, you had the Shnei Dayonim Gzeiros Yerushalayim, you had the two Dayonim who were specially, their specialty was dealing with matters of Gzeilus and other things of dinim Mominus. We said there were two Dayanim, Chonon and Chonon and Admon. We said really there was a third one as well, also named Chonon, but he wasn't as important. In any case, the Mishnah had said over there that Chonon disagreed with the other Chachamim on two Dinim, and one of them is relevant to our Gemara over here. So our Mishnah would be specifically according to Chonon's opinion, as opposed to the Bnei Kohenim Gdolim, who disagreed with him, would say differently. So we'll quote in a couple of lines, we'll quote what Chonon says. Rava disagrees with Rav Hoshea and says, no, you could say that our Mishnah goes according to everybody. The difference is, Gabe Mudr Hana, because the difference is, over here in our case of the Mudr Hana, where he's also to have Hana, the reason why it's Mudr, the Yohiv Amunas Shaloi Lefraya, because the case is he's paying, because the case is rather, the original loan was taken out Almanas that he doesn't have to pay. So you can have a case, in other words, where previously, so before there was ever this neder, Reuven had gone and borrowed money from Levi. Levi had told him, they'd arranged a loan that Reuven has taken out a loan from Levi. However, Levi is not going to be able to force Reuven to pay back the loan. Reuven on his own should eventually pay. But he's not. But Levi has waived any rights to force him to pay. So now when Shimon goes and pays off the loan on his behalf, so on the one hand, Reuven might have paid eventually because he's embarrassed every time he sees Levi on the street. He's going to remember that he owes him money. But still, he had the choice not to pay. So therefore, you can't really say that Shimon gave Reuven any kind of tangible benefit. So the Ran goes on to say, by the way, that according to this, we would have to say, as far as the case of the Machzah Shekel, where again, we were saying the reason why it's mutter by the Machzah Shekel is because he has a portion in the Korbanos anyway. And we said, if not for that, now the problem is with the Machzah Shekel, the fact is that the collectors will come after him. So don't you have the same problem that if they're coming after him, then according to Rava, how is Rava going to understand? So according to Reb Hoshea, we can understand because again, we're going to quote in a minute, we'll quote Chonon that says that even when you have any other kind of debt, even though the person eventually would have had to pay that debt, nevertheless, it's only mavriach ari, it's only removing a potential source of harm, not actually giving them anything. But according to Rava, who says that our Mishnah can work according to the opinion against Chonon as well, according to the Bnei Kohenim Gdolim, as we learned in Ksubas. So according to him, it's not that mavriach ari is mutter, it's just that you have a special case where they're not coming after him. Well, in the case of Machzah Shekel, why aren't they coming after him? So the answer is, the Ran says, Rava would have to understand our Mishnah as talking about that he did send his Machzah Shekel. And then, so now what happened was, we learned at the end of Ksubas, that three times a year, they would go into the chamber there where the Machzah Shekels were kept in the Beis Hamikdash, and they would take out boxfuls of coins to pay for the Korbanos. Once they do that, and they have in mind that everybody who has not yet given Machzah Shekel is included as well, at that point, at that point, if the person's machzah shekel gets lost or stolen on the way, then at that point, it's already considered to belong to the treasury of the Beis Hamikdash, and therefore, nobody's going to be coming after him to pay. All he has to do is he has to swear an oath to the Gizborim, to the treasurers of the Beis Hamikdash, that this is what happened, and then he's potter from paying. So therefore, nobody's coming after him. So now, if instead Shimon says, you know what, I don't want Hekdash to lose out that machzah shekel, I'll pay it on Reuven's behalf, then it's exactly the same kind of thing as paying off a debt where Reuven had taken out a loan from Levi, and the deal was that he doesn't have to pay it back. Because the same kind of thing, the Gizborim can't force him. That's what the Ran explains. So again, according to the Rava, we don't have to say that the first two cases of our Mishnah, so the third thing of our Mishnah about Machzor Avidase, we'll discuss further down on the Amud. We'll learn that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. But right now, the first two cases of the Mishnah involving the Machzor Shekel and involving paying off the debt. So again, according to Rav Hoshea, only Chanan would say that this is Mutter for a Mudder Hanah, as we're going to learn in a second what Chanan said. And Rava is saying that no, it could be according to all opinions, because we're talking about over here in both cases, in the case of the loan and according to the Ran, also in the case of Machzor Shekel, that we're talking about a situation where he can't be forced to pay in the first place. So my Chonon, what is Chonon's opinion that bears on this? So Ditznan, we learned in the Mishnah at the end of Ksubas, Misha Holach L'Medina Siyam, if a husband went overseas and his wife needs mezonos. His wife needs to be supported while he's away. Somebody voluntarily went and started supporting the wife while the husband is away. So now the question. So we're talking about that the person didn't say, I'm lending you the money. And it wasn't that the husband told him before he left, I want you to be in charge of supplying my wife with mezonos. He did it voluntarily without considering it a loan or anything. So now, Chanan Omer Ibed Esma Oisav. So Chanan says he's lost his money. In other words, nobody is responsible to pay him back. And the reason would be, again, because this is an example of Mavriach Ari. This is an example of that the husband would have been subject to a valid claim by the wife. You left me without mezonos. I had to go and sell some of your property in order to do that. Now I needed to borrow money for the purpose. Now you need to reimburse me. But like this, in other words, it's only Mavriach Ari, so he's only preventing the husband from suffering that kind of loss. Therefore, Chanan says you can't make anybody pay him up. And the Mishnah continues. So applying that to our Mishnah, we would be saying that in our Mishnah, it's only Mavriach Ari. You're not actually giving him anything. You're just preventing a claim from being pursued against him. The Mishnah continues over there. Nechlek wa'ala b'nei Kohenim Gdolim. The sons of the Kohenim Gdolim argued with Chanan. So with the Kohenim Gdolim, you know, we learn in Yuma and in other places that the Kohenim Gdolim towards the end of the second Beis Hamikdash weren't so good, and often they would only serve for 1 year, but nevertheless, still their children still were alive after them. And apparently we see from our Gemara that they were Tamid Chachamim of some caliber, enough to be quoted in the Mishnah. There are other Gemaras that imply that they weren't such good people as far as Midas Tovis, but apparently, or at least their servants and whatever were harassing the people and causing other problems. But we see over here that they were also Tamid Chachamim of note. Anyway, so they argued, V'omru, and they said, Yishova Kamahotzi, let this third party, this person who voluntarily supported the wife while her husband is away, let him swear how much he spent the Yitil, and he should be entitled to be reimbursed for that amount. Because, in other words, they're saying that even though it's only Mavriach Ari, even though it's only preventing the wife from pursuing a claim against her husband, nevertheless, that's considered giving the husband something. Well, therefore, the husband has to reimburse him. And the Mishnah continues, Amar Rav Dosi ben Hokinas Kedivreyem. Rav Dosi ben Hokinas agreed with the Bnei Kohenim Gdolim that the person is entitled to reimbursement. On the other hand, Amar Rav Yechon ben Zakkai Yofa Amar Chanan. Rav Yechon ben Zakkai says that Chanan said correctly, because we can say he niach ma'osav akeren atzvi. In effect, it's like he put his money on the horns of a deer. In other words, imagine you put money on the horns of a deer. It's going to run off, and you're never going to see it again. So it's a metaphor for a person spending his money in a way where he's never going to see that money again. We learned over there actually a different explanation that a tzvi, we said we learned over there an explanation that a tzvi, a deer sheds its antlers every so often and it hides them in a crevice or something. So you're not going to find it again. You're not going to find those antlers in the crevice so easily. So the same way, like as if the money was tied to the antlers and then they're being shed and you're never going to find it again. Whatever the case, the point is it's a metaphor for, it's an expression for, it's an expression for when a person spends money that he's never going to see returned to him. So therefore, so now, sort of Hoshea applies that to our Mishnah. So only according to Chanan, according to Chanan, we'd be saying the person has no recourse. He has no ability to collect from the husband. He made it that the husband didn't have to support his wife during that time, but it's only Mavriach Hari because the wife would eventually come with a taina against her husband, and all he's doing is preventing that taina from taking place. We can't say that he actually gave the husband something, as opposed to the B'nai Kohenim Gerdim would say that he did. Well, applying that to our Mishnah, if Shimon pays off Reuven's debt, when Reuven is also to have anah from Shimon, according to Chanan, that would be fine, but according to the B'nai Kohenim Gerdim, it wouldn't. So therefore, Rav Hoshea says our Mishnah has to be specifically according to Chanan. And then again, Rava had said that no, our Mishnah is talking about the special case where it's a debt where nobody was going to be able to demand it from him anyway. The deal was when he took out the debt that he will pay it voluntarily if he wants, but nobody can force him to do it. And therefore, our Mishnah would be talking about that specific kind of debt. By the way, in that Gemara in Ksubas, Rabbi Tam learns over there in Tosfos that even Chanan is going to apply that kind of thing only to a case of a husband and wife because, among other things, the wife has other possibilities. Among other things, she could eat less during the time that her husband is away. Instead of requiring X amount for food, she could manage on less during the time her husband is away. Or she could use her Maisiyah Deha and use that to buy food for herself instead. Rabbi Natam says over there, even Chanan wouldn't necessarily apply it to other kinds of debts. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, it would come out that over here, we'd have to be talking about specifically where Shimon pays on behalf of Reuven when Reuven is out of town and didn't leave Mazonis for his wife. According to the other, Rishonim would apply more generally. The Ran has a long discussion over here, actually, of that point. He brings from the Rashba, that only if this other guy tells the wife, the reason why I'm giving you this money is because I understand that your husband was supposed to provide you mezonos and he didn't, and therefore I'm taking over for him instead. But if he had not said that, if he'd just done stam, says the Rashba, then even Chanan would agree that he is entitled to collect again, because then we assume if he didn't say anything, it means that he's lending the money. And then the Ran goes into a discussion of that point according to the Rashba, and the Ran says I disagree with that. That even if he just does it stam, then we would still say according to Chanan hiniach ma'osav akarin atzvi that he's lost his money and he has no recourse. And then the Ran goes on to discuss what the halacha is. The halacha is in fact. The halacha is in fact like Chanan in the smachlokas with the B'nai Kohenim Gdolim, but in what cases is the halacha exactly like him? So the question is, why do we have two different answers? Why did Rav Hoshea have one answer and Rava had a different answer? So the Gemara says, Rava like Omakir Rav Hoshea. Rava did not want to explain our Mishnah like Rav Hoshea did, that it's according to Chanan, because the Kamukim Lomastisim Kedivra Hakel. Rava would prefer that our Mishnah, being a Stam Mishnah, should be according to everybody rather than have to say that it's only according to Chanan. On the other hand, Rav Hoshea, like Omakir Rava, Rav Hoshea does not want to explain the Mishnah like Rava and say that it's talking about a case where he can't force him to pay the debt, because Rav Hoshea would say, Zera Shalobi Para Mishum Li Para. It's true, in principle, you could say that where the deal was that Reuven is not required to pay Levi for his debt, then you could say that it's not considered that Shimon paying on behalf of Reuven is not really considered a hanah. But nevertheless, Rav Hoshea argues that we would have a reason to say that we would make a gzera that he shouldn't pay it back in that case, because that might easily be confused with a case of regular loan, which is amanas lipara, And then that would be a hana. So therefore, so Rav Hoshea is going to say that we can't make our Mishnah work like the B'nai Kohanim Gadolim, because it's true in principle it should, but we make a gzera otherwise because we don't want people to confuse it with the regular kind of loan, which is meant with where he can demand payment. And therefore, Rav Hoshea says the only way to make our Mishnah work would be like chon. So actually the Gemara in Ksubas actually makes a different point over there, that there's another reason, there's a different reason actually, that Ran quotes, that why it is that he wouldn't be allowed to, even forget about Xerus. The fact is, when Shimon pays off Reuven's debt, it's true he's only Mavriach Ari. However, what he is saving Reuven from is from embarrassment, like we were saying before. Like this, Reuven is going to see Levi every so often on the street, and he's going to be embarrassed. I borrowed money from him, and I never paid him back. It's true that Levi has waived his right to demand the payment from Reuven, but Reuven himself is going to feel embarrassment every time he passes by Levi in the street. So therefore, so we could say that the B'nai Kohanim Golem would consider that to be a hana to the extent that we would say that he can't pay off on his behalf. Only Chonon wouldn't consider that a hana. Therefore, Chonon would say, in the case of our Mishnah, that he can pay off his debt, and we're not worried about that, whereas the B'nai Kohanim Golem would be concerned about that. So that would be a different reason than our Gemara is saying, according to Rav Hoshea, why, according to the B'nai Kohanim Golem, he couldn't pay off his debt. So our Gemara is saying, because of Gzera, that Gemara is saying, because the fact is, he is saving him from embarrassment, and that's considered a hana as well. And the bottom line is, according to Rav Hoshea, that is why our Mishnah cannot work according to the B'nai Kohanim Golem, only according to Chonon. So as far as the next piece, as far as Machzer Avidasa, we'll take that up tomorrow, Bez Hashem. Yishkoyach, everyone.